When Langdon reached the landing at the bottom of the stairs, Sonnier's clever anagrammatic message was still on his mind, and Langdon wondered what Sophie would find at the Mona Lisa, if anything. She had seemed certain her grandfather meant for her to visit the famous painting one more time. As plausible an interpretation as this seemed, Langdon felt haunted now by a troubling paradox. P.S. Find Robert Langdon. Sonnier had written Langdon's name on the floor, commanding Sophie to find him. But why? Why me? Langdon wondered. Why was Sonnier's dying wish that his estranged granddaughter find me? What is it that Sonnier thinks I know? P.S. Find Robert Langdon. He fixated on two letters. P.S. In that instant, Langdon felt Sonnier's puzzling mix of symbolism fall into stark focus. Like a peal of thunder, a career's worth of symbology and history came crashing down around him. Everything Jacques Sonnier had done tonight suddenly made perfect sense. Without hesitation, Langdon broke into a sprint back toward the stairs. Kneeling in the first pew, Silas pretended to pray as he scanned the layout of the sanctuary. Turning his head to the right, he gazed into the south transept, toward the open area of floor beyond the end of the pews, to the object his victims had described. There it is. Embedded in the gray granite floor, a thin, polished strip of brass glistened in the stone, a golden line slanting across the church floor. The line bore graduated markings, like a ruler. Tourists, scientists, historians, and pagans from around the world came to Saint-Sulpice to gaze upon this famous line. The Rose Line. Slowly, Silas let his eyes trace the path of the brass strip as it made its way across the floor from his right to left, slanting in front of him at an awkward angle. The strip cleaved the communion rail in two and then crossed the entire width of the church, finally reaching the corner of the north transept where it arrived at the base of a most unexpected structure, a colossal Egyptian obelisk. The Rose Line, Silas thought. The Brotherhood hid the keystone at the Rose Line. Earlier tonight, when Silas told the teacher that the priory keystone was hidden inside Saint-Sulpice, the teacher had sounded skeptical. But when Silas added that the brothers had all given him a precise location with relation to a brass line running through Saint-Sulpice, the teacher had gasped with revelation.
You speak of the Rose Line.
The teacher quickly told Silas of Saint-Sulpice's famed architectural oddity, a strip of brass that segmented the sanctuary on a perfect north-south axis. It was an ancient sundial of sorts, a vestige of the pagan temple that had once stood on this very spot. The sun's rays, shining through the oculus on the south wall, moved farther down the line every day, indicating the passage of time from solstice to solstice. The north-south stripe had been known as the Rose Line, and long before the establishment of Greenwich, England, as the prime meridian, the zero longitude of the entire world had passed directly through Paris and through Saint-Sulpice Church. The brass marker in Saint-Sulpice was a memorial to the world's first prime meridian.
And so the legend is true, the teacher had told Silas. The priory keystone has been said to lie beneath the sign of the rose.
Standing now, he faced the altar and genuflected three times. Then he turned left and followed the brass line due north toward the obelisk. Sophie arrived breathless outside the large wooden doors of the Salle des Etats, the room that housed the Mona Lisa. She reached for the huge wooden doors and pushed. The entryway yawned open. Sophie stood on the threshold a moment, scanning the large rectangular chamber beyond. The Salle des Etats was one of this museum's rare cul-de-sac, a dead end and the only room off the middle of the Grand Gallery. This door, the chamber's sole point of entry, faced a dominating 15-foot Botticelli on the far wall. Beneath it, dead center of the parquet floor, an immense octagonal viewing divan served as a welcome respite for thousands of visitors a day to rest their legs while they admired the Louvre's most valuable asset. Even before she entered, though, she knew she was missing something.
A black light.
She gazed down the hall at her grandfather under the lights in the distance, surrounded by electronic gear. If he had written anything in here, he almost certainly would have written it in the watermark stylus. Sophie hurried down to the well-lit crime scene. Finding a small ultraviolet penlight, she slipped it in the pocket of her sweater and hurried back up the hallway toward the open doors of the Salle des Etats. Sophie turned the corner and stepped over the threshold. Her entrance, however, was met by an unexpected sound of muffled footsteps racing toward her from inside the Salle des Etats.
"There you are!"
Langdon's hoarse whisper cut the air as his silhouette slid to a stop in front of her.
"Robert, I told you to get out of here. If Fash..."
"Where were you?"
"I had to get the black light," she whispered, holding it up. "If my grandfather left me a message..."
"Sophie, listen." Langdon caught his breath as his blue eyes held her firmly. "The letters P.S. Do they mean anything else to you? Anything at all?" Afraid their voices might echo down the hall, Sophie pulled him into the Salle des Etats and closed the enormous twin doors silently behind them, sealing them inside.
"I told you. The initials mean Princess Sophie."
"I know. But did you ever see them anywhere else? Did your grandfather ever use P.S. in any other way? As a monogram? Or maybe on stationery or a personal item?" The question startled her.
How would Robert know that?
Sophie had indeed seen the initials P.S. once before in a kind of monogram. It was the day before her 9th birthday. She was secretly combing the house, searching for hidden birthday presents. Sophie had mustered the courage to sneak into her grandfather's bedroom. The room was off limits to her, but her grandfather was downstairs asleep on the couch. Tiptoeing across the creaky wood floor to his bureau, she opened the drawers and one by one began pawing carefully through them. In the bottom drawer, she pulled aside some black clothes she had never seen him wear. She was about to close the drawer when her eyes caught a glint of gold in the back of the drawer. It looked like a pocket watch chain, but she knew he didn't wear one. Her heart raced as she realized what it must be.
A necklace.